Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I kind of lent to, or at least I hoped to leave you with a show for Monday that would pick up exactly where we were in reading the Constitution. My apologies for the show not airing and for a previous show airing. I, a loved one had a procedure that I needed to be at, and so I just was unable to actually be in two places at once to be able to do the show. And so if I am not available, if I'm not living to broadcast these shows, then it's left to fate as to, you know, what's going to air and so forth. So anyway, the show that we recorded, which was, the way we left off in our previous episode for Friday in the week as this aired, and as we started talking about Constitution Day on the 17th, well, so we were expecting to actually provide you with the details because we just wrapped up on Article 2. And so it was my desire to drill into on Monday's show to be able to give you all of the details, you know, put it all together for the Electoral College. And that because we're heading into an election and understanding the Electoral College is paramount. The fact of the matter is we're not following the Constitution in choosing our electors. And I, to be honest with you, I'm just absolutely scared of the ignorance and the illiteracy of America, because we're really fighting this concept of democracy, mob rule, and subjugation. So anyway, my sincerest apologies. This is 2 days late because it only made sense to actually follow up with the Electoral College show, which is what we ended up airing on Tuesday on the 22nd. And so today, September 23rd, I'm having to do a little side dance because we didn't get the show that was recorded for the 21st on the 21st. So again, I please forgive me. Please accept my sincerest apologies. I have no intentions in not giving you the content that I was planning on giving you. So anyway, enough groveling. As you know, I appreciate all of you who tune in, and I appreciate all who actually share this, because I do know that there are people that are getting this. There are people that are actually regurgitating the messages and the content and the concepts that we're providing. So those are good things. It really doesn't matter, as you know, if people start getting educated and we start losing our ignorance and we become enlightened as a society, that is a win. That's a good thing. So anyway, so where we are today, we're going to drill into, starting with Article 3, and we're going to keep drilling into the Constitution. What we want to do is just get through all of this so that you understand every line in the Constitution in the same fashion as the framers understood it. And so this is why we kind of put things together for you. But more importantly, you should already understand the Constitution because we've read the ratification debates, because they've already described and explained what this line means, what that line means. I'm not making it up. It's right there. Madison was the one that was providing this illumination, and Iredell, all of these wise, great men who were a part of the process of ratifying the Constitution. So with that, as I always say, this show is also sponsored by Reclaiming the Republic, as well as republicreview.org. Those are both .orgs, by the way. this is the only show that is seeking to enlighten you with the academic-based evidence of what is wrong and the academic-based evidence solutions of what we need to do to fix those wrongs. I'm hoping that you are actively pondering your role in both petitions, your First Amendment petitions, as well as common law grand juries. I'm going to be writing a paper. It seems like I may have to actually provide some insights regarding common law grand juries because there's just a lot of people. What the heck's a common law grand jury? People don't even know what common law is, and that's scary. Anyway, let's just go ahead and move forward. I do appreciate all of you that have tuned in and continue to tune in. And I really apologize. I gave everybody fair warning. There was a good chance that on the 21st, the show that we recorded for it wouldn't be aired. But anywho, we hoped and we were optimistic. Anyway, Article 3 of the Constitution is the article that covers the judiciary. It's kind of short. It seems to be ambiguous, but there seems to be one thing that falls short regarding management of the judiciary. It's the weakest branch, and however, it has been the one branch that has been able to create great usurpations for the federal government. It seems like what was deemed as the weakest branch out of the entire federal government, it has become the fortifier in unconstitutional powers. And that's really just due to the fact that whenever you take your case to court and you go into the federal court system, if there is no jurisdiction, then you've already surrendered your sovereignty and your control over the issue and have subjugated yourself to a court that has no say, no jurisdiction over something, and you've taken a huge chance that that court is now able to decide your fate. That's why the court system is for very specific things. So, Article 1, Section 1, let's just dive into this. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. Now, I want you to understand what that one little line meant. In such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. In other words, see, Congress is the puppet master. Congress has the ability to expand the reach of these inferior courts to get them out there. And so there have been times in history, in American history, where there have been calls to reduce the courts, to expand the courts, and so forth. And as a matter of fact, if you remember FDR, he was planning on stacking the courts. Those are nefarious designs. Anyway, the judges both of the Supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall, at stated times, receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. Now, I don't care about the pay of a politician, a judge, or a lawyer, other than the fact that it should be adequate for compensation. It should not be opulence. In other words, if you want to get into a judiciary position, that needs to be more of a desire of doing good than it is to become powerful and or to have that kind of money and emoluments. Anyway, the judicial power, this is Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, who cares what anything means regarding law and equity? The bottom line is it has to be within the boundaries of the Constitution. So what are the boundaries? The enumerated powers. Remember, the federal courts has no jurisdiction over life. They have no jurisdiction over marriage. They have no jurisdiction over anything unless it is within the boundaries of the Constitution, such as war, such as post offices, such as post roads, such as the defenses and securities and international commerce, or disputes with commerce and trade amongst the states. They don't have the ability to dictate and rule. They only are the referees between the states, which is why they weren't even a nuisance. They didn't get into the knickers of what the states were doing. It was only after more and more and more states, and I'll just say politicians as well as lawyers, helped aggrandize the Supreme Court and the federal court system, because that's where we're going to get everything fixed. No, that's where everything got perverted. So moving on, arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. So they're laying out the jurisdiction of the federal court system in Section 2, that the judicial power shall extend to all cases of law and equity arising under this Constitution. With that, we will be right back after these two promos, so please stay tuned, and we'll be digging into the judiciary, since that's a hot topic right now. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so Section 2 is kind of lays out the jurisdiction of the federal court system. And so they're basically kind of say that the judicial power regarding the federal court system, the federal judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States. And what are those? What are the laws? What laws of the United States are laws that are in pursuant to the Constitution. So what about the Civil Rights Act, or the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, or the Defense of Marriage Act? Are those laws in pursuant to the Constitution? Nope. Now, even though some of these might be good on the face of them, but we do not want a general government to have their fingers in those types of topics. The federal government, the general government, does a great job in fighting wars. They do a great job in protecting us. But they do a really bad, because when they have their fingers into those types of things, they start playing. And what ends up happening is you start getting social engineering and all this overreach and so forth. So anyway, getting back to what these laws are under the laws of the United States. Laws of the United States are laws that are within the constitutional boundaries created by the enumerated powers of the Constitution. And treaties made. Now, I want you to understand something. If France came along and said that they made a treaty to share half, you know, for every woman they send us, we'll send them a woman. And so it would make it seem like, okay, Congress has passed that law, the president signed it, or they've signed this treaty by two-thirds of the Senate, not even creating a law, but they created this treaty that for every woman that France sends us for, you know, whatever we want to use women for, we would send them one. Well, most anybody would tell you that any law, any treaty that's agreed to between two countries becomes the supreme law of the land. And the Constitution even tells us that. But the Constitution also tells us that they only have jurisdiction over certain things. So can Congress, can the Supreme Court, can the president get their fingers into basically allowing America to receive women and send them women? No, it would be unconstitutional because they don't have the power. It's not within their realm to be able to put on the table to trade or make an agreement with France. This is why you got to understand the limitations. The jurisdiction of the federal government is limited. This goes right back to Madison during the ratification debates. He said it the most succinctly. Their jurisdiction is limited. It is limited to the enumerated powers within the Constitution, period, cut and dry. So laws of the United States, unless they are tied directly to these enumerated powers, the federal government is just making laws that are unconstitutional and violating our rights and taking away the rights of the states. So anyway, back to again, what does this power extend in all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority? See, there's the key word right there, under their authority. To all cases affecting, so now they have all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. These are external things. Those things do not affect us in, you know, us land lovers, those who live within the constitutional boundaries of the United States. To controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states. And then here is some highlighted part, because these words, these few words were changed by the 11th Amendment. Between a citizen and citizens of another state. And then the 11th Amendment does not touch these. Between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state, claiming lands under grants of different states and between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign state citizens and or subjects. Now, so they're basically kind of becoming the referee between these different types of parties, but their jurisdiction is still limited to those types of cases where they have the enumerated power. So, and this is all really about land cases and cases between citizens of different states and so forth. this really, it plays out to everything that goes with land and or property. Okay. And so they also, let me add this, and I'll take it from the last line again. And between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign states, citizens or subjects. Now, see, one of the reasons why they kind of laid this out to basically say that they had these jurisdictions, it goes to the empowerments, or I should say the enumerated list of powers. It is clear that the Constitution was intended to protect American citizens from foreign magistrates, from foreign laws, and from foreign mingling. And so if a U.S. citizen happened to violate a law on the high seas, or they committed a law against the law of nations, or they violated a law of nations, which means that they are outside the United States, committing this heresy in, let's say, France again, then the Supreme Court claims and the Constitution claims jurisdiction. Now, it was a noble thing that they did in doing this, because down the road, as America became more affluent and more powerful, we had that ability. But in the very beginning, when Britain started impressing and was continuing to impress our sailors and take our ships, Washington, with this brand new Constitution, could not enforce American jurisdiction over our citizens because Britain didn't recognize it. But it was, again, the noble idea. But now that we're in a position where we can actually make claim to jurisdiction over all our citizens and these things, why is it that we find politicians wanting to surrender to foreign courts? Because they want to surrender our sovereignty to foreign entities and foreign, I'll just come up with foreign governance. Entities and governance, because that's what it's all about for these folks. These globalists want literally to surrender America and our citizens and our rights to these foreign entities and governance, whether that be the UN, whether that be the IMF, or whether that be the World Trade Organization. These are all shell entities that are moving forward the global elitists' agenda. And it's all about control, folks. That's all it's about. So the next line, or I should say the next part of Section 2, it's the next kind of subparagraph. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, in those in which a state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions, and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. And I'm emphasizing this one line, because this one line allows Congress to actually reel in and dictate whether the court shall hear something or whether they can't hear something. In other words, the court is so weak in this Constitution that Congress has the power to scale them back and get them back into the framework. And they have all this power. The Judiciary Act, or the Judicial Act of 1790, I believe, was the first one that basically gave the Supreme Court and the federal court system their marching orders. Go off and do these things. And if you really stack up all the judicial acts, it seems to me like they've been given all the rope necessary to strangle and tie down America and basically allow the insatiable reach of power of the federal government into every aspect of our lives. And this is why we have, the federal government dictating how much water they, you can flush with your toilet, or how much water you can run while you're taking a shower, or whether it be how much energy is being consumed at one light socket and so forth. They are out of control. Now, this next one is really interesting, because this has been violated a lot. the trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury. The trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury. Interesting. So in Louisiana, where they just started allowing capital punishment to be done by jury, there's a lot of crimes that are being committed, and they are not allowing jury trials. Interesting. So with that, we'll be right back. We're going to finish section 2, and then we'll go into section 3. We ought to be done with the third article today. So hang on. We're going to get through the rest of this judiciary. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so actually it dawned on me that we need to clarify what the crimes that the federal government has jurisdiction over. Now, this is not according to GR. This is according to Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, well after the ink had dried on this Constitution. So what is it that the federal government can dictate what's legal and what's illegal and decide the punishments and the crimes and so forth? Kidnapping? No. What is in the Constitution? They shall have jurisdiction over treason. They shall have jurisdiction over counterfeiting, and they shall have jurisdiction on high crimes and misdemeanors committed out on the high seas and or crimes committed against the laws of nations. So those are the crimes that the federal government has a guarantee. Now, up until the 14th Amendment, the states did not have to guarantee the privileges and immunities that were guaranteed, the U.S. citizens were protected from the federal government. In other words, prior to the 14th Amendment, the states could pass any law they wanted. They could say you can't carry sidearms. They could limit your ability of speech. They could actually ring in the press. Well, they still can. But they could dictate an established church, and they can dictate education. The state has all sorts of powers that were available to it until the 14th Amendment. All of a sudden, the 14th Amendment applied those same restrictions in protecting U.S. citizens' privileges and immunities. And that's right there in the 14th Amendment, Section 1. It's the second line. It's the second clause. Some people kind of confuse it with the Due Process Clause, but it's not the Due Process Clause. It is the Privileges and Immunities Clause. And so the states today cannot pass a law at all that infringes or impedes or takes away anything that the Constitution protects, such as your right to assemble. So let's just say, go wild here on the air, just flying by the seat of my pants. And let's just say there's a governor out there that believed he had emergency powers and could declare that you couldn't assemble and that you can't go and safely practice your religious worship. And they pass laws and enforce those things. That would be a direct violation of the 14th Amendment. And no state constitution can grant any laws that can actually violate the Constitution. The Constitution is supreme over all things under its, you know, those things that it has the enumerated powers and jurisdiction over. And when it comes to your religious expression and your right to assemble, that is protected by the Constitution. In other words, states and these governors have violated that. In so doing, they have committed open rebellion against the Constitution, and in so doing, they have violated Section 3 of the 14th Amendment in being rebellious against the Constitution and violating it. And therefore, all of these governors, this is why we're appealing to everybody, start working with us so that you can start getting your First Amendment petitions drawn up and go after every single one of these tyrants that is stealing away your livelihood, that's stealing away your religious expression and your religious freedom, your ability to assemble as a society. Now, they do have emergency powers, but they cannot infringe upon these protected privileges and immunities. However, if you're a person, and this is so easy to get. If you happen to have an infectious disease that can cause harm to somebody, they can quarantine you because you can cause harm. But just implying that everybody could be hurt is unacceptable. Government does not have that power unless you amend the Constitution and grant that kind of power. And I'm going to ask you right now, as you've seen how this has played out and how this has become political to where America is going to hurt until this upcoming election, because all of the laws in the state of Washington actually expire the day after the election. Is that a coincidence? You have to understand what the heck they're doing and why they're doing this. This is about control, and they don't care about the Constitution. Therefore, teaching you what the Constitution does, what it means, and how you can use it as your weapon against them. They've all violated their oath of office. They've committed moral perjury. And that means that you have the right to demand their removal and banishment from public service for the rest of their life at a minimum. You can also go after them, as far as I'm concerned, and take every bit of property value that they have to pay restitution to everybody who has been harmed by these tyrants. As far as I'm concerned, we have to actually get in control of this. We actually have to start educating people so that we can start moving forward. So anyway, as we move forward, we will continue to go through the Constitution today and however long it takes. But One of the things we want to make sure is, as we go through this last Article 3 here, it was modified by the 11th Amendment. So I'm going to have to grab the 11th Amendment. So we're going to go to a break in about 4 minutes, and then I'll grab the 11th Amendment so that we can actually insert those words, because we do want to make sure you do understand exactly what those words mean, okay? So anyway, you go back to this, committing all the trial of all crimes except in the case of impeachment shall be by jury. Just remember, I just put it into a box for you exactly how many of these crimes that they actually can punish, or which very specific crimes can they actually take you to court for. And so with that, we've kind of narrowed that down to treason, counterfeiting, high crimes and misdemeanors. And we've narrowed that down to laws or crimes against the laws of nations. That's it. That's it. So when the federal government created the Alien and Sedition Acts, they had no authority over that. That's why they were nullified in Virginia and Kentucky. But that wasn't the end of it. What Madison and Jefferson were trying to do was something a lot more. But this was the first time the federal government aggrandized their reach into crime and being able to control speech, which was a direct violation of not only the Constitution, because it wasn't an enumerated power, but it violated the actual restrictions placed upon it through the Bill of Rights. Anyway, let me get back into this. So these crimes shall be by jury. Each case will be tried by a trial by jury. And such trial shall be held in the state where the said crimes have been committed. But when not committed within any state, the trial shall be such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. So in other words, the court doesn't actually do that unless actually the... and I don't know if Congress does or not. I've never followed this up. But if Congress has kind of a whiz dial that says, okay, if the crime is committed in this quadrant of the states, then it'll be held in this court or what have you. But again, these are only crimes that they have jurisdiction over. This isn't rocket science, friends. Section 3 of Article 3, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or adhering to the enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. Now, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them. So people read into this and say, oh, well, you have to have a military. No. How many people were convicted in the Whiskey Rebellion of treason by the United States? This was a rebellious protest against taxation on distilled alcohol or distilled liquors. The whiskey tax. There were two. Two people were actually convicted of treason. Now, that was only against a tax. I'm not talking about actual protest against our legal system, our laws, our constitution, our liberties. What you see right now going on across this nation is an absolute insurrection against our constitutional laws and our system. It is treasonous, and these folks ought to be hung or hanged. As far as I'm concerned, we also really need to, and I've said this before, we've talked about this, we need to revisit the Tory Acts. I believe that what we should do is say, okay, you've been arrested and will be tried for treason unless you choose to be extradited to any of these countries of your choice. And those countries would either be, you know, Cuba, China, North Korea, you know, a true communist state where these people who are advocating communism can go and live the rest of their lives under the form of government that they have chosen. And so, anyway, I think that's fair. It gives them an opportunity. It can save us a lot of money through the legal system and the court costs, right? Anyway, we've got a break. We'll be right back. We're going to wrap up Article 3. We may even get into Article 4 right after this.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so what we need to do, and I've got to kind of put everything because I've got a couple of different screens here. And so what we need to do is just go through the few words that changed in Article 3 of the Constitution by the 11th Amendment. And this was passed in 1795. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizen or by another state or by citizens or subjects of any foreign state. Did you understand what that just said? And so I'm going to read what they had in here. Let me pull it up because I don't necessarily have it like I did yesterday, where I actually put it in a bunch of different documents and I gave you the layers. Then I kind of put, you know, this part, and then this part, and then jammed it all together. I did not do that. But with this right here, this is what the Constitution in Article 2 says without the 11th Amendment. Between a citizen, okay, so to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, and then this is what's been changed, between a state and citizens of another state. Now, the 11th Amendment says the judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizen or by another state or by citizen or subjects of any foreign state. So in other words, you just can't make that direct assumption that the federal court has the jurisdiction that it extends to them. Okay? That's all that they changed right there. But they wanted to make sure that the court wasn't going to be, one, I think, overwhelmed. And secondly, I believe that the intent was to ensure that the court didn't have this ability to be, you know, creep out of its box, because as they started aggrandizing themselves and their positions, I think it would have been easy to recognize at that point in time why they wanted to make sure that there was this limit between citizens of a state and another state and or with foreign states and so forth. But again, I think the noble effort in the Constitution was to ensure that the U.S. citizens were protected from definitely foreign laws and foreign systems. Anyway, Section 3 of Article 3, treason against the United States shall be consisting of living warrant. Okay, we just did that. But the last part of this, the Congress shall have power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during life of the person attainted. And so this is one of those kind of just lofty, I don't want to say lofty, but Congress has the ability to declare the punishment of treason. But I wanted to be clear that when people said that this actually we had to be at war with a real declared enemy, we did not. That's why the first, right out the gate in 1791, they arrested 24 and convicted 2 of the 24 with treason. And the ink had just dried on this Constitution, and they had already used it against people who thought that they could rebel against the supreme law of the land. Now, the Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason. And then they are not to create any bill of attainder or an attainder of treason without corruption of blood or forfeiture, except during the life of the person attainted. Anyway, so I guess that they just can't go after your kinfolk, your son, and that type of thing. But anyway, they just wanted to make sure because those types of laws actually existed. As a matter of fact, do not forget that in France and many other countries, if you committed heresy and it was discovered, I think in France when Sir Isaac Newton died, he wrote a book that would have been considered heretical. And this book actually, pointed to the fact that that France did not have the true church. And so it was truly heresy, but he gave the manuscript to his nephew to publish 6 years after his death, because in France, if you were found heretical or you committed heresy, they would dig you up and burn you. And he did not want, that was bad juju back then, he did not want his remains to be dug up and burned in heresy, because they believed at that point in time that, the burning of a body was, one that would be unable to get to heaven. I don't know why. I don't know. I just understood that there was this superstition. And the fact is that there were those types of laws out there, and they wanted to make sure that it was only limited. The punishment was only limited to the person that committed the crime, that they actually, got the goods on. Okay, so Article 4. These are some basic bold assertions of what the federal government is going to do, can do, should do. These aren't necessarily powers, but they illuminate certain powers within this. And so Section 1 of Article 4 is the full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state, and the Congress may, by general laws, prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. Section 2. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens of the several states. In other words, they wanted to make sure that the laws, and so if you have a license and in the state that you live in allows somebody to drive at a certain age, let's say 16, and one state says, we're not going to let people drive until they're 20 or 21. That might be a good thing. But what that means is that the citizens of that other state, this is kind of like the reciprocity, that citizens of the other state, their privileges and immunities shall be applied equally as they go across. So I don't have to surrender my driving abilities because I have been given a license in one state to drive. That license must be respected in these other states. It's the same thing with constitutional carrying of guns and so forth. If you come from a state and you are a citizen of that state and you have a right to carry constitutionally or what have you, those rights actually transcend via the Constitution across all state boundaries. A person charged in any state, now this is one I love, a person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. So this is the one little punch right here, folks, that we use with Republic Review in demanding that Congress either do their job in dismantling all the unconstitutional powers, or they will be charged with treason and brought back to the state and tried as a public servant who has failed to live up to their oath and is committing outright rebellion against the Constitution in supporting unconstitutional laws and acts and so forth. Right here. Here's the tool you need right there in Article 4. No person, now this one right here is a 13th Amendment change. No person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. Now, this law right here was completely nullified by several states in the North. Wisconsin, I believe, was a huge state that constantly nullified, or they did not recognize that law. So that was one of the reasons of the underground or the underground railroad. And so as slaves would be escaping, they would get into these northern states because they knew that they could not be surrendered or that they would be protected. And so there you go. I mean, even though they made this law, the 13th Amendment actually changed that and actually took away that responsibility, because as you understand, the 13th Amendment was when this was when Lincoln was really throwing the shot across the bow. And so let me just read the 13th, the abolishment of slavery. This was ratified in 1865. And this was ratified by whom? This was ratified by the northern states. The southern states weren't even in the Union, just like the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment and the 13th Amendment, or this 13th Amendment, was ratified by the northern states. And it's basically said neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except, well, we'll have to get into this. What we're going to do is we'll marry up the 13th Amendment to Article 4. Basically, because that line should actually be removed and this line should be inserted there. But they don't do it that way, as I've explained to you. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and we're going to finish going through this however long it takes. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.